I'm sitting in a coffee shop in Sacramento, staring at my laptop. I call myself a writer, which lately has become a euphemism for being unemployed. And in walks Christopher Cabaldon, the mayor of West Sacramento, our neighboring city. I live in the capital of California. This town is full of politicians, and Christopher has still managed to carve out himself a pretty hotshot reputation. He's handsome, Filipino, openly gay, extremely ambitious. He's been mayor for 2 decades, and during that time, his city has doubled in population. Businesses have opened shop, jobs have been created, and the local government now provides universal preschool for its youngest residents. Christopher is known by mayors of big cities across the nation. He's always flying to Washington, D.C. He's friends with U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein. He's worked with Barack Obama. You get the picture. Anyway, he sees me and sits down at my table and asks what I've been texting him about. For the last few months, I've been occasionally texting the mayor, requesting a meeting. I never get a response, and to be honest, I'd given up. So I tell him, I'd like to write a story about the car accident that killed your mom. And the mayor does something I've never seen before. He doesn't say anything. He just stares off into space. I've been interviewing Christopher for the past 5 years about various political issues. And every time I call, he rattles off this string of rehearsed talking points. Or at least, it seems rehearsed because he's already considered all my questions. But on this topic, he's speechless. I asked him later what he was thinking in that moment.
Well, I didn't want to do it. Who would want to do this? Really, I mean, there's no part of me that wants to talk to other people about it in any way. And certainly not to people who I'm not actually, who I can't see their, you know, their eyes, whatever, but this is not something I talk about. And it's thoroughly private and personal. And you're a reporter. I've sparred with you plenty of times in our respective roles. So I did not have a ready-made, I didn't have a set of talking points from when you asked me about this.
So why agree?
We just don't talk about this in the world. And so I know how I felt, and I know plenty of other people who feel, you know, like they are the only ones struggling with it. Or they're the only ones struggling with it even 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years after the moment.
This is the line that grew my interest in the story. It's actually been 40 years since Christopher was in the car when his mom lost control and smashed into a wall. He's hinting that he's still struggling with it. Politicians rarely admit that they're struggling with anything, and certainly not anything personal that happened 40 years ago. The mayor agrees to tell his story because he hopes people might relate to it. But he also trusts me with his story because he knows something we have in common. I also lost my mom in a violent accident. Last year, I wrote an essay about what happened, and Christopher texted me to say he enjoyed the piece because something similar happened to him. That's when I started hounding him to tell his story. When we start talking about Christopher's accident, it dawns on me that we have something else in common. Both of us work every day to make mom proud. It's one of the biggest motivators. There's nothing extraordinary about this. Most people want affection from the person who raised them. But the curious part is that that desire to make mom proud, it doesn't go away after she dies. Okay, we've all seen this trope in the movies, right? The character walks down the graduation stage in a cap and gown and looks out into the audience, and there's mom with a big smile on her face, or like a ghost of mom. Or it's Simba's father from The Lion King who appears in the clouds and empowers his son with some sage advice. My question is, does this really happen? It seems kind of weird to pull a Lion King and have a conversation with a dead parent. My hunch is that most people never take it that far. But maybe they should. That's what this show is about. If you were close with mom, you keep bringing issues back to her, whether or not she's alive. And if you don't, it might be a good idea. Before we move on, there's something else I should say about my mom. She died in an accident, but it wasn't a car accident. We were hit by a train while standing in the train tracks. You're probably wondering, how in the world did that happen? I ask myself that question every day. More on that after the break.
I night of my 12th birthday, I got home from school, and my mom had baked my very favorite cake for my birthday. I had pretty much it every year. Betty Crocker cherry chip cake with sugar-free whipped cream as the topping. And it was during the week, but we were going to celebrate my birthday anyway. Dinner rolled around, and we had to wait because my dad wasn't home from work yet. He worked all the way in downtown LA, and we were in the hills, and so it must be late from the traffic. But then he still wasn't home. This is 1978. There was no cell phones. There was no way to track somebody down, no pagers, no nothing.
It's Christmas morning, 2008. I wake up before sunrise at my mom's house, and we set out to drive to the Sierras to go cross-country skiing. It's just me and her. My parents are divorced, and I'm an only child. I'm home for a long weekend from Sacramento, where I just started my first job out of college. Mom has been taking me to the mountains to go skiing since I was a toddler. The drive usually takes about 3 hours. But this big blizzard hits us, and we're stuck in traffic until early afternoon. We finally get to the ski resort in Truckee, and it's late, and the conditions are bad, and we just decide to save our money and not go skiing. So I'm frustrated. You know, it seems like the whole day is wasted. But my mom, Sydney Parks, she says, "Relax your brow." That was her phrase whenever she caught me being sad or brooding. I remember being a little kid and having her wipe her hand across my forehead. It's funny, the things we remember.
We ate dinner, but we saved the cake. Then my dad still wasn't home at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, so my brother went to bed. And I sat with my mom while we waited a little longer. She was upset about the birthday and about not knowing where my dad was. She decided this would be a good time to tell me about the birds and the bees, which, you know, didn't put the best light on the whole situation. Then finally, I had probably 9:30 or 10 o'clock, she put me to bed. I went to my room, lied down in bed, tried to sleep. My room's right next to the carport of our house. I was waiting for my dad to come in, so I didn't really fall asleep. And then I heard this loud crash of glass breaking. And I heard my mom screaming, but my dad wasn't home yet. No, there was nobody else there, but my brother, who was asleep in the room next to me, and me and my mom. So I snuck out of my bedroom because it was way past my bedtime, and tiptoed down the hall to the front door, which was ajar, and opened up the front door, and my birthday cake, which had been sitting on some fake crystal glass pedestal, was on the ground, completely smashed, on the front porch. And my mom was still in the living room screaming. So I went back to my room. I didn't know what to do.
So we turn around, and we set out to do the three-hour drive back home. But as we're driving to the highway, I look out, and I see this family walking in the snow. They're in the middle of this hill, and it looks pleasant out there. We park the car, and we just start walking into the snow, kind of aimlessly. And I notice the snow under my feet looks uneven, and I kick at it with my foot. And my foot hits metal, and I realize we're at a train crossing. My mom is walking ahead of me on the train tracks because it looks like this perfect little trail with this hill on one side and a creek on the other. I look around and I'm thinking, okay, it's Christmas Day, everything is shut down, there's ice and snow covering the tracks, a train is not going to roll through here.
Later in that week, my parents summoned my brother and I together and said that they were going to be taking some time off from each other and splitting up and separate. And so we started looking for houses, and it was a tough time. I didn't know anything like this was coming, neither did my brother.
We make it a couple hundred feet on the train tracks, and this big plow train speeds around a curve, and it's like right in front of us, charging at us. We didn't hear it coming. And now we have a few seconds to get out of the way. The train has this huge metal grill, and waves of snow are just spewing out from both sides. There's this yellow spotlight on the front, like a big eyeball. Without thinking, we both start running to the right, up the hill, and my mom falls, right in the middle of the tracks. She starts moaning in panic. I turn around and grab under both her armpits and try to throw her out of the direction of the train. As I lift her up, we're both struck.
My mom's sister's daughter went to her birthday party, and it was fun. I remember listening to Hall & Oates songs and playing games, and my mom was drinking because she was upset. And then we got in the car to go home finally, and my brother and I both piled in the back seat and lied down on the back seat and just went to sleep. And as we left my aunt's house, then the next thing I remember is waking up in the hospital.
I'm knocked a few feet from the train, spun around, and I land face first in the snow. My mom is hit head on by the train, and she's thrown about 25 feet. I turn around in the snow, and the train is coming to a stop, and there's this loud screeching of brakes. I try to lift myself up, but my right arm is broken. The bone on the upper arm has actually snapped in half. I turn my shoulder, and I can feel the bone twisting around inside the arm. It's a really strange sensation. It feels like my skin is the sleeve of a jacket. I remember thinking, I need to get to Mom. She's laying there, motionless, with her back to me in this unnatural, contorted position. So I try again to get up, and I realize my right foot is broken, and it can't take any weight. So, to get to Mom, I'm sliding across the snow with my left arm and leg. When I reach her, she's slowly blinking her eyes and opening and closing her mouth, but she isn't making a sound. Parts of skin on her lips have been torn off, exposing teeth. All the alarms are going off in my brain, alarms I didn't even know I had. My thought is, this is really bad. My brain is struggling to think, how do we fix this? How does this get better? And I just start repeating the same words over and over again. We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. I'm going to take care of our family. Okay. Don't worry, Mom.
We're going to be
okay. I'm
going to
take care of our family. I'm going to be okay. You're going to be okay.
We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay.
Something was wrong with my ankle and my hand, and there was some cut on my face. And I looked over across the room, and my brother was in the next bed over, also bandaged up and other injuries. My dad comes in the room and says, boys, there was an accident, and you were in a car accident, and your mom didn't make it. I didn't know how to react. Neither of us did. We just we were wailing, obviously, but just all at once she was just gone. And at the age of 12, maybe at any age, I mean, just go to sleep one moment and then wake up and your mom's just gone.
By the time the paramedics get there, Mom has stopped moving. This team of guys hoist me onto this plank, and they start walking me toward the ambulance. And that's when I lost it. I just started screaming.
The last real conversation my mom and I had was us fighting about me not cleaning my room, and like for the fifth day in a row, and me saying something that I would, if I remember what it was, I would regret it, you know, forever. So many things just get left undone, and so you know, the drive to try to repair that break and to make meaning of it, I feel like that has to be stronger than if she had been, you know, gradually, you know, battling a disease or something that she could have helped me process. I could see some path, and I could prepare, and I could say something, and she could say something, and I could just hug her one more time. You just don't get the chance in an accident.
Christopher's mother, Diane, is buried in the San Fernando Mission Catholic Cemetery in Los Angeles. The graveyard is tucked in a residential suburb surrounded by auto malls and small convenience stores. Christopher told me he's been visiting Diane by himself since he was able to drive a car. The gravesite has always been the place where he updates Mom on the biggest decisions in his life. Once something is said at the gravesite, Christopher says, it becomes real. but he's also asking Diane for feedback. He talks to Diane, out loud. He said he's usually crying as he does this, but he walks away with new insight.
I'm checking in with myself through the lens of what I think, what she would be seeing and what I'm saying and thinking and what her advice might be. Now, I don't know even. I mean, I've been doing this for decades, but my knowledge of my mom's like lens on these things is from being up to 12 years old and my mom being exactly 32. my 12-year-old insight into what her advice would be is not that going to be that great. So it's a mix of what I know I need to say to myself, and a mix, but at least in some sense, tinged and lensed by what I think she would say.
So what has this experience taught you about death and about relationships?
The fact that I'm projecting my mind into her head. Technically that's not real, but it is real in the sense that it's forcing me out of just my own way of looking at it. And with what little knowledge a 12-year-old kid has about his mom's point of view on the world, it turns out it's actually quite a bit, little sayings and little lessons and observations about what she did and choices that she made. That even for a short, but now looking back is a short, it's just a few number of years, sticks with me even today in evaluating, and giving myself advice and reaching my own conclusions.
I'm going to cut my interview with the mayor here. When I pitched Christopher at the coffee shop to talk about his accident, I was a journalist looking for a story. I wanted to write a profile on the mayor of West Sacramento and sell it to a magazine, which is what I ultimately did. I wasn't thinking about personal discovery or self-improvement. I knew people would read the story, and to be honest, I needed the money. But talking to Christopher made me start thinking about my relationship with my mom and the advice she would give me if she were alive today. And I need advice right now. I've been trying to make it as a freelancer, but I'm not bringing in enough money, and I need to make some career choices. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that I've been doing this all wrong. Yes, I've been following mom's advice, but it's the last advice she ever gave me. I haven't allowed the relationship to develop since she died. Let me back up. It's a few weeks before my accident, a dark, cold December night. I'm sitting on the couch in my mom's warm, dimly lit living room in Petaluma. I'm telling my mom about my new job, my first salary job in journalism. I'm an education reporter in the state capitol. I had just started. Throughout my childhood, I had wanted to become a journalist, and Mom never heard the end of it. When I was in 7th grade, I used to wake up at 5:15 a.m. and sit in the living room and fold newspapers. I had written to the Petaluma Argus Courier to ask for a job as a columnist. I wanted to be their video game reviewer. They thought my offer was cute, and they gave me a job as a paperboy. Fast forward to December 2008. Barack Obama has just become the nation's 44th president, and Mom turns to me and says, "Alan, I just know that someday you will end up as one of the reporters on that presidential plane. I can feel it." This feels really weird, but I'm going to follow the lead of the mayor of West Sacramento and, Simba from The Lion King and ask Mom for advice. Oh God, how did I get here? All right, anyway, here goes. "Mom, let me catch you up on what's happened since you died. I did it. I became a journalist. I've spent the last decade covering politics in Sacramento. But I haven't had steady work all year. I'm running out of money, and I'm married now, and I've got a mortgage, and this relentless pursuit of journalism as a career, it's causing some stress. This line of work was originally my goal, but then it became your goal for me. And at this point, I don't even know how much of this is my goal for myself anymore or something I know I can pursue to make you happy. I stay in journalism and I make you proud. I go and do something else and I don't know. I know you would just want me to be happy, but here's where it gets really tough. You died that day and I didn't. You wanted me to become something and I'm not becoming that person. I'm afraid I'm losing you. And if I change careers, I lose you a little bit more. It feels like I'm leaving you out there while I go on with my life and become something else. Becoming a journalist made sense. That was like the moral of the story. His mom died knowing he'd be successful, and he did it. So Mom, I'm asking for your permission here. I need your permission to change. I need your permission to walk away. I want to make enough money to be a good provider and to grow a family. And I'm going to need you with me. I'm going to need your advice. And I think I have it, Mom. I think I have it.
Turns out you don't need the person there to actually give you a sense of love. Because it is, just the idea that she's still with me in some way, whether she's watching over me or she's just in my own heart, gives me a sense of strength and, but also, being, embraced and, some kind of support and caring and love, and whether I'm hearing it externally or not, the fact, even if it's just coming in my own head, that matters. And actually in my life, it's mattered a lot. It's very real. And it is true, because if she could, she would be doing those things. The things that are in my head are not wild fantasies, right? The love that I may invent or imagine is who she was, and it is who she would be if she was here.
Now that we've told our story, this is the part where we'd like to hear from you. Tell us about a special person in your life who is no longer alive, and how you've continued to nurture that relationship. Who knows? Maybe someone will hear your story, and it will help them sort out some stuff. That's what I ended up with, from a pretty unlikely source. Email 4amcall@gmail.com. That's the word 4, the letters A-M, and the word call, all run together. My name is Alan Young. Thank you for listening.